Good evening and welcome to Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vishnu Shroman. On the programme tonight, the BJP has hit out at Congress leader Rahul Gandhi's Mohabbate Ki Dukaan or Shop of Love outreach in his ongoing tour to the United States, claiming that the Congress leader was actually running a Nafrat or Hatred ka mega shopping mall by pronouncing divisions in the country that don't exist. Now, Mr. Gandhi is on a week-long tour to Washington, to New York and San Francisco. He's been accusing the BJP of dividing people on the basis of religion. He's blamed the BJP and the RSS for centralizing resource allocation and for alienating minorities in the country, also questioning foreign policy. On the show tonight, two diverse views on the visit of Rahul Gandhi. I'll be joined first by Bharat Barai, a key member of the VHP in America, someone who's worked closely with the Prime Minister during his visits to the US and is a key member of the Overseas Friends of the BJP. I'll also be joined then by Sam Pitroda, a key counsel for Rahul Gandhi, not just on this visit to the United States, but in general. And later on the program, it's a one-hour show tonight. Morgan Stanley is out with a new report speaking about the transformation of the Indian economy over the last 10 years. Yes, there are potential headwinds, but the overall picture seems positive. I'll be joined by the president of Morgan Stanley India later on this program. But first, let me go straight across to Mr. Barai. Sir, thanks very much for being with us. Now, Rahul Gandhi says the BJP and the RSS are, and I quote, incapable of looking at the future and can only talk about the past. He said this at the Javits Center in New York. How would you respond, sir?
Vishnu, I think I have different opinion. Number one, it is the electorate of India that elect the members of parliament and prime minister. United States is not the place for do the campaigning. It should be done in India. The role of diaspora should be to try to help the growth story of India. I don't think it's appropriate to do the dirty linen washing in the United States. I would have rather preferred if Rahul Gandhi would have asked the Indian diaspora, what can you do to try to help India's growth story? Right. What can you do to help India's poor? What can you do to try to promote industrialization in India? What can you do to improve the living standard of people of India rather than trying to blame Prime Minister Modi, trying to blame VHP, trying to blame BJP?
You know, Mr. Barai, what Rahul Gandhi said, and he said this a couple of times, I'd like your response. He said, Nafrat ke bazaar mein mohabbate ki dukaan khol raha hu. And, you know, he said this over and over again. It seems to be, you know, perhaps an election pitch. He's done it overseas. But is the BJP worried about this language, this discourse, for political reasons or otherwise?
You know, I'm very disappointed. Actually, what he ended up doing is a Dhikkar ki Dukaan or Nafrat ki Dukaan rather than Mohabbat ki Dukaan. And as I said, United States is not the place for anybody. I give you an example. 1 month ago, there were six members of parliament. They were from all different political parties, BJP, TMC, DMK. These are the people who came. We had dinner with them and we told them, you are here as our guest. We would like to deal with you as representative of India. And whatever we can do to help you to promote India's growth story, we would like to do it. That is the positive role that Rahul Gandhi and all other leaders who come from India, that is what is expected out of them. And we as NRIs, diaspora, want to help whatever way we can to India and people of India, not a political party.
But you know, Mr. Barai, in as much as you say that, it seems quite clear that Rahul Gandhi has that particular vision. He says, for example, the simplest way to describe the fight, he's talking about the BJP versus the Congress, is that on the one side you have Mahatma Gandhi, on the other side, Nathuram Godse. Do you see the Congress positioning itself in this way ahead of the elections? And does this represent a threat to the BJP? I take your point about, you know, he shouldn't be saying this outside the country, etc., etc., but he has. It's nuanced and he says it repeatedly. So how would you respond to that specific allegation?
Vishnu, A, he's dead wrong on the facts. He's wrong on his theme. He's wrong on the facts. Nathuram Godse was a criminal who murdered Mahatma Gandhi. Why is he trying to compare Mahatma Gandhi and BJP and Congress? In fact, it was Mahatma Gandhi who had said that Congress should be dissolved as a political party. So if he's trying to follow Mahatma Gandhi's words, he should dissolve the Congress party, which they've not done. So let's not bring Mahatma Gandhi and Nathuram Godse in 2023. We should try to talk about who is going to take best care of people of India, who has the vision for India, who has the power to execute what they want to do for India and ultimately bring up the living standard. This whole hate thing that is going on, saying Prime Minister Modi does not talk to the scientists, he does not talk to the economists, he thinks he's above the god. You know, this is all nonsense. Prime Minister Modi talks to some of the best people, best minds, and that's what all prime ministers should do. They should try to get a team which consists of best specialists, experts in different fields, listen to them and lead the country. And that's what exactly Prime Minister is doing. In fact, what is surprising is all over the world, Prime Minister Modi is the most admired person.
Yep.
And yet, for Rahul Gandhi, he always puts a negative sign over everything.
I'll come to this particular point in a moment because I wanted to talk a little bit about that as I talk about the upcoming state visit. But bear with me, another point that Rahul Gandhi says, all the giants that have emerged from India fought for the truth. They were humble. There was no arrogance in them. That is how Indians have worked in America, and that's why Indians have been so successful. And he says that's why he respects and honors, Indians who've built a life in the United States. He's basically speaking about the value of humility. Do you believe, again, that this line of thought has an impact on the diaspora, the people he's addressing in America?
This is one thing that I will agree with Rahul Gandhi about, how the NRIs and the Indian diaspora and the diaspora all over the world from India have come up. But Narendra Modi is the most humble person that you can find. He came from a very poor background, a chaiwala's son who served his father's tea stall. He rose through the rank. He did not have any golden spoon in his mouth. So whatever he has achieved on his own merits. And Rahul Gandhi should admire the son of a chaiwala becoming prime minister on his own merits. Look at what has happened to India. In the last 10 years, India has come to GDP number 5 in the whole world. Today, both Putin and Biden admire Narendra Modi. All the world leaders seek his company. France is inviting him to come to the Bastille Day celebration as a special guest. Japan is inviting him. Australia is inviting him. The Prime Minister of Australia, Prime Minister of Canada, Prime Minister of Britain, President of France, President of United States. Those are all people inviting him as guest, special guest. So this is really a non-aligned foreign policy of India, not hating everybody, but being friend with all the top countries of the world.
Sure.
So I think Rahul Gandhi should be admiring the Prime Minister of India. And that's where I want to compliment my friend Sam Pitroda, that he said, I am proud of Prime Minister Modi. And Rahul Gandhi, I think he should get advice from Sam Pitroda and also try to admire Prime Minister Narendra Modi.
Well, Mr. Pitroda is up next on this program. But do you seriously think, Dr. Barai, that foreign policy is something that would influence people in India ahead of the elections or during the election campaign? A lot of people would suggest that the real issues are linked to development, they're linked to prosperity, to unemployment, to inflation, and that in as much as the Prime Minister has had remarkable success outside, I don't think anybody can dispute that, that is not really something which might influence voters ahead of 2024.
Well, I will let the voters decide for themselves, but if they ask my advice, I'll say Narendra Modi has provided leadership to India, brought the prosperity, brought the growth, brought the industrialization, brought Atmanirbhar, both in field of economics and defense, unparalleled in India's last 75 years of history. So he gets all the credit for leading India to such a prosperity. Yes, the living standard of India is being improved. I hear from all my friends who visit India, and I also see it myself, how much India has come up. In fact, Narendra Modi's vision, which he had shared with me once, look at South Korea, where it was a time of armistice, mm-hmm. and how it has become a developed, industrialized nation. That is his vision to try to bring India. So he has a great vision. He is executing it very well. And I hope he continues to do good job for the people of India.
Do you believe the diaspora are influencers for people back home?
To a limited degree, yes. But for example, the reception that Narendra Modi received at Madison Square Garden, then in San Jose, then in Houston, and now he will receive it this month, certainly gives a great message to people in India that Narendra Modi is loved very much by the diaspora.
Would you like to tell us a little bit, I was coming to that next, about the state visit? We know what President Biden is, you know, I mean, how he's going to be hosting the Prime Minister, how there's going to be a state dinner. And, you know, there's a lot of attention associated with that. But what about the diaspora? What do you have planned? And I'm told that you actually know A to Z about what's going to happen. So spill the beans is the question.
Well, the diaspora is organizing a very good, actually, we were looking forward to organizing a grand event in Chicago. But because of this some conflict, at the other end, it did not happen. We would have been very happy to do it. So we are going to do an event in Washington, D.C. for the Prime Minister on Friday, the 23rd. Let the event speak for itself.
How many people do you expect to attend?
The full capacity of the hall, because we can only find so much of capacity. And within 2 weeks' time, we just got confirmation a few days ago. So within a period of 2.5 weeks, we'll organize an excellent event.
And so it's going to be thousands of people. How big is the hall, or will it be a more intimate sort of affair this time around?
Well, the hall can permit about 1,000 people. It will be at the Ronald Reagan Center in Washington, D.C. You know, we are constrained by the capacity of the hall. But if I had the hall and if I had 3 months' time, we could have had 40, 50,000 people easily.
Is that what you were targeting in Chicago?
Yes. If you would have come to Chicago, and if we had 2 months' notice, yes, we would have had 40, 50,000 people.
You know, a final question to you. A few days back, you know, in the United States, Rahul Gandhi said that the RSS and the BJP are controlling all instruments of politics in India. He said, and I quote, "I think if you sat Modi ji down next to God, Modi ji would start explaining to God how the universe works." How would you respond to this remark?
I think as a doctor, I'm sorry to say, but he has some hallucinations in his brain.
Okay.
He's just imagining the things that don't exist. Prime Minister Narendra Modi is one of the most humble person. He listens very carefully to what people say. He realizes who he is. He's providing great leadership and great vision. To try to put this kind of accusation against such a humble and yet very highly achieved man is very, very disappointing. I think as a doctor, I would say you should see a psychiatrist.
All right. Well, strong words from you there, Dr. Barai. But it's going to be a very important visit between India, of the Prime Minister to the United States. It's going to be important for several reasons, including the potential transfer of high technology, particularly in the defense sector. Let's see how that actually goes. That actually is a key aspect of the relationship between America and India. But thank you very much, sir, for sharing your views and your thoughts. On this forthcoming visit, and of course what Rahul Gandhi has said.
I can just add one thing, that Indian American Security Council, it's a group of diaspora that have been closely working with United States Congress exactly for what you mentioned, transfer of high tech military technology from United States to India. So diaspora are very much involved in promoting it at the legislative angle in the U.S. Congress and Senate.
And are you confident that that high tech that India is seeking in terms of transfer of engine technology, jet engine technology, will actually take place?
I hope so.
You got a bit of a smile on your face over there, Dr. Barai. Let's see what finally happens. I'd like to thank you very much, sir, for being with us. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Well, joining us now, Mr. Sam Pitroda. He's been a close counsel for the Gandhi family. He's been very close to Rahul Gandhi. He's accompanied him on this visit to the United States. He joins us now. Thanks very much, Mr. Pitroda, for being with us. Now, you know that a piece in the First Post says Rahul Gandhi on this visit to the U.S. is indulging in, and let me quote, he's indulging in uttering a string of falsehoods, painting a sorry image of India, playing up China's strengths, ridiculing Hindu culture, customs, beliefs, exposing the visceral hatred of the Prime Minister or to the Prime Minister, vilifying the BJP, etc., etc. Many would suggest that many in the BJP actually believe that that this is exactly what Rahul Gandhi is doing. How would you respond to some of these points mentioned by the BJP? Yeah,
I would say all of that is lie after lie after lie, as always. In democracy, opposition party has a responsibility to tell a different view. Opposition party does not have to have the same view as the government. Rahul Gandhi came here to talk to NRIs,
yes,
intellectuals, universities, and people on Capitol Hill. He came to express his views. Just because your view is different does not mean in democracy that you are criticizing anybody. Why is everyone so hung up? I don't understand. It's a democracy. World is global. Indian democracy is global public good. It is okay for me to criticize somebody. What's the issue?
So I'll tell you why some have a problem. Some in the BJP say that Rahul Gandhi seeks legitimacy for his polarizing views, which
he
have been rejected in so many
legitimacy.
Indian states. That's the argument.
They can say anything.
To answer your, sort of the question that you raised.
They can say anything. They say all kinds of things. They've lied about me too. They have no shame about lying. And I'm telling you reality of life from our perspective. Okay, their perspective is different, I'm sure. Their perspective is very different about Gandhiji,
right,
than mine. Their perspective is very different about truth, trust, love, democracy. Democracy is not about elections. Democracy is about institutions. I know that institutions are captured in India. I know how courts are run. I know how university vice chancellors are afraid to have a free voice on campus. What are you telling me? At the same time, civil society has been hurt. You talk to 100 voluntary agencies and they'll tell you what's going on. That's what democracy is all about. Democracy is about free speech.
You know,
democracy is about freedom.
Rahul Gandhi has repeatedly said on this visit, nafrat ke bazaar mein mohabbat ki dukaan khol raha hu. Is this
so
part of a strategy to mobilize the diaspora? Now in the US, earlier in the United Kingdom, I don't think he used this phrase in the UK, but is this an effort to challenge Narendra Modi's impact on overseas Indians?
No. All he is doing is he is telling what Congress Party stands for. He is telling that Congress Party stands for truth, trust, love, freedom, justice, and Congress Party stands for poor people at the bottom of the economic pyramid. World over, there is a fight right now, even in America, between rich and poor, between underprivileged and privileged. Look, in India, we have caste system. In America, we have Black Lives Matter. So it all depends on which side you stand for. If you stand for the rich side, everything looks very different. If you stand on the poor side, everything looks exactly opposite. So it's good to have the view. So don't attack people based on different view. It's okay. That's what democracy is all about. I don't understand what is wrong with these people. Okay? You and I can have a conversation and we could disagree. That's okay. But that doesn't mean I need to jump on you and send, 500 people tweeting unnecessarily. Okay? That's what they do. And that's not fair. So look, Mr. Narendra Modi as a prime minister has a machinery behind him. He has media behind him. He has, MPs behind him. He has governments behind him. Rahul Gandhi has nothing behind him. He's not even a member of parliament now. You know what happened to him? So when Rahul Gandhi comes here, embassy doesn't even come to receive him. Ambassadors don't even pay attention to him.
No, but is there an expectation that that would be the case? I mean,
no, but that's okay. Have you ever complained? That's okay. That's perfectly understandable. Okay, we accept that. Even when he was MP and we went out.
So Mr. Petroda, I don't think many would accept that argument that Rahul Gandhi is as helpless as you portray him to be. I mean, he's just
won
a massive state election.
I'm not saying helpless.
He's done a massive...
Do not
Bharat Jodo,
misunderstand,
etc. No, he's not that helpless, sir.
Did I say helpless? I'm saying that's the situation. Okay, that's not helplessness. Don't define that as a helplessness. Please understand, helplessness is very different. Helplessness would be, I'll go looking and begging for help. No. So don't twist the facts. This is what goes on Indian TV, my friend.
No, I'm not twisting the facts. I'm trying to understand what you're saying.
You're saying helplessness. Did I say helplessness?
No, you didn't say helplessness, but you were speaking about a power differential between the Prime Minister and Rahul Gandhi. Number one. So therefore, I asked you the question saying, but is Rahul Gandhi necessarily that helpless? Does that power differential necessarily affect him?
That's not the point.
And your point is, no, it isn't. Fair enough.
No, it isn't. But I'm saying that is the difference. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
It is not about helplessness. It is about the difference of positions.
Got it. Okay? Mr. Pitroda, next question. Is there a stark divide between how the Congress would like the BJP and the Prime Minister to be seen in the United States and how it is seen? For example, the Prime Minister
Absolutely.
Is going to be in Washington for a state visit
Absolutely.
Soon. The relationship between India and America has never been closer. So there are those, for example, in the BJP who say that why is Rahul Gandhi there now? At a time when America and India are getting perhaps closer than ever before.
Okay, I would say to them, why not? In a democracy, why not? Okay.
So I suppose, and I don't speak for them, I'm just trying to say, I suppose their answer to that point would be that why use foreign territory on a trip where there is so much national prestige attached to raise critical questions and possibly uncomfortable questions on India. That's how they would respond.
Narendra Modi, as Prime Minister, should be answering questions. Did he ever have a press conference? Is he going to go and address National Press Club? Is he going to be taking questions from the university students? That's what democracy is, my friend. Okay, democracy is not about broadcast. So when Rahul Gandhi comes here, we interact with university students, intellectuals, professionals, even, you know, congressmen. We have interactions with them. Okay, there's a huge difference in the way we deal with things than they deal with. And there is no such thing as foreign soil anymore. In this day of an age of internet, web, there is nothing that is local. Everything local becomes international. Everything international becomes local. There are no borders. And Indian democracy is global public good. So what are you talking about going on foreign soil and all that? It's a mindset. Okay. There is no foreign soil. There is one world. And India is the largest democracy in the world. So we have a moral responsibility to talk about our democracy openly, honestly, sincerely, and disagree.
But Mr. Pitroda, tell me one thing. The fact that the Prime Minister is possibly the most popular international leader, the fact that he's getting a state visit in Washington, he's adored by leaders of so many countries, he's made a huge impact on the diaspora abroad. Is Rahul Gandhi actually trying to sort of gain back some of that? Is that what the goal over here is?
No, it is not a competition. It is not a competition between two individuals.
Because Modi seems to be unmatched in terms of support that he has from the diaspora.
It is not a competition. Look, Narendra Modi gets respect because he's a prime minister of 1.5 billion people. He does not get respect as an individual who can go on a campus and interact with students. He does not get respect as someone who can stand in front of press and communicate well. He does not get respect by intellectuals. We are talking about India and not about individuals. Individuals have nothing to do with it.
Okay. One final
question,
sir. Of
course, Prime Minister of India gets respect. I'm proud of it because he gets respect on behalf of 1.5 billion people. Not because he's an individual. Don't get it wrong.
All right. Okay. One final question. And again, this is the one point that the BJP brings up over and over again. Say what you have to say. Disagree with whatever you have to disagree. But why do it on foreign soil? They insist that
there is
a difference.
Thing as foreign...
I heard what you said closely, but I'm asking you that
no
question
such thing
again.
As foreign soil.
It just seems to
there
be an
no
insult
such...
to India in a foreign country, is what they say.
Look, if you think India can be insulted by somebody, you have a wrong idea of India. India is a nation of 1.5 billion people. Nobody can insult India. India can never be insulted. India is not that petty that you can insult by one comment or the other comment. Indian can be insulted. That's different.
All right.
Okay. I don't think anybody in this world is capable of insulting India.
All right.
India is too big.
No, I agree with you. We need to rise beyond our petty politics, look at our nation holistically, and perhaps understand that we should not and cannot be insulted by anyone. I'd like to thank you very much, Mr. Pitroda. Out of time. Nice discussion with you. We'll take a short break at this stage. Come back.
Good to talk to you.
New positive GDP numbers are a part of several statistics that increasingly appear to show India being on a sound economic wicket, at least for the moment. At a time of great uncertainty, the India story by and large appears to be positive, though of course there are some areas of concern, as you might expect. Morgan Stanley recently published a major report focusing, among other things, on India's economic transformation. Joining us now for now more on that and a lot more on the Indian economy and where we are presently, Ridhan Desai, the president of Morgan Stanley India. Thanks very much, Mr. Desai, for being with us. Now, Morgan Stanley, in your recent report, you've said that India has transformed in less than a decade. In your mind, what are some of the key reasons behind that transformation in just 10 years?
Hey, thanks, Vishnu, for having me on the show. So I think this is down to three things. There is a sea change in government policy on some really critical aspects concerning the economy, like the build-out of infrastructure, flexible inflation targeting, and we can get into some of those a little later. The second is the natural transition that the Indian economy is undergoing with the passage of time. So we used to be, $1,400 per capita income country in, say, 2013. 10 years later, we are now at around 2,300. And that marks an inflection point. It's, like the hockey stick. You start surging from here. That's the history of the world. So when per capita incomes reach that level, you suddenly find things changing. And the third is how global forces are getting aligned. And at Morgan Stanley, we call this the multipolar world thesis. So the world was organized in a bipolar fashion, where China was concentrated with global production and America accounted for bulk of global demand. The world is now getting multipolar. So production facilities are moving away from China into other places, including India. And consumption baskets are growing elsewhere, including India. So there are these three forces that have got aligned: some fruitful, strong government policies, natural transition in the Indian economy, and a multipolar world that we are now in the middle of.
How would you compare India's growth in this decade compared to the decade before this? Because, we've seen GDP growth rates in India have been fairly phenomenal in the previous decade as well, rates above 8%. But in this decade, they did actually come down to less than 4% even before the pandemic of 2019. So while the Morgan Stanley report says that India has transformed under this government, how does it compare with the economy state under the last government?
I'll make 2 points here. That's a very good question, by the way. So the first point is it's not about absolute growth, because we don't live isolated. We are in a planet with many other countries, and what happens to the world at large has direct impact on India. So it's always about relative growth. How quickly are we growing versus our peer set or versus the world? And the second is about all the fixing that the economy had to undergo, say between 2013-14 and 2019, due to some of the things that had happened in the preceding 5 years. So with respect to relative growth, actually, if you look at the numbers, we are now accelerating versus the world. Mm-hmm. So for example, India is under 4% of the world economy. Okay, so the world economy is sized at just about $103 trillion. We are at under $4 trillion. So we're less than 4% of the world economy. This year, we'll account for 17% of global growth. So on a relative basis, even though on an absolute basis, it seems like we have a modest growth rate of say 6-odd%, the relative picture is very much in favor of India. What has happened in the last few years is that world growth has also slowed down. And the world is certainly a lot challenged now versus where it was in the first decade of the millennium.
Sure.
Because it's aging and because it's got a lot of debt. So that's the first thing. The second is that, you know, in the aftermath of the global financial crisis, India did make a few policy mistakes, and that resulted in a pretty severe banking crisis, and it also resulted in very high inflation. Now, a lot of that took a while to get fixed. We are now arrived at a situation where I dare say Indian banks are probably the best in the world.
Right.
So our financial sector is, you know, has got, you know, technically it's one of the best in the world. And we have more or less nailed inflation. And, you know, the evidence of that is look at what's happening in the Western Hemisphere. Mm. The US, Europe, places which have not experienced inflation for 40 years are struggling to fix their inflation, whereas India is actually looking far more benign.
Sure.
So that is, I think, the context of, you know, when you make a comparison of absolute growth rates, you know, this context is lost.
Now, the report also says that India will emerge as a key driver for Asia and global growth. By when do you think that will happen? The IMF has already said that India will contribute 15% to global growth by 2023. Do you believe that that's a realistic target? Or in your own estimate, when would India actually be a global contributor much larger than we are presently?
So it's already getting there. As I cited, you know, this year India will account for around 17% of global growth. Our estimate is that over the next 10 years, on average, India will be about 1/5 of global growth. So that's a pretty big number, because the starting point, India is under 4% of global GDP. So it's clearly the incremental driver to world growth, similar to what China experienced, you know, a decade ago, when China was the place that was driving global growth. And this is one of the reasons why multinational companies are flocking to India, because India is the place that they are probably going to get their incremental revenue growth and a lot larger profit growth.
Sure.
Because of you know, the various conditions that I explained about India that are unfolding right now.
Your report also says that global recession is a key risk to the Indian economy. You know, do you think a global recession, how near do you feel a global recession might be, and what could, you know, that potentially impact India? And I mean, could there at all be chances of India falling into some sort of a recession itself?
So see, Vishnu, here we are not expecting a recession in the world on a base case basis. We do think that there will be a pretty meaningful slowdown in global growth. And if you look at our estimates for the Western world, or for the developed world, I would say, it is, you know, 0.5% growth in the fourth quarter of this year. So that's, you know, as close as you get to negative growth. Technically, you get recession if you have two quarters of negative growth. So we
right.
will probably skirt that at the world level. Now, India is already exporting more than 20% of its output. Goods and services put together, that number is, you know, is well over 20%. So it's not going to be unscathed if there is a meaningful slowdown and a recession in the world. We will see some slowdown, particularly in goods exports. Now, the good news here is that India's services exports have surged over the last 2 or 3 years. And this is one of those rare silver linings in the COVID mishap, which is during COVID, typical MNC CEOs started getting comfortable with work from home. And if you're working from home, you're better off working in India than in Florida. It's a whole lot cheaper. So a lot of jobs got shipped to India. We estimate 1 million jobs actually came to India from overseas, and that number keeps growing. And our services exports are actually booming and have exceeded everybody's targets, including ours. So that is, I think, cushioned, and it's probably unlikely to get affected as much as physical good exports during a recession. So yeah, there will be some impact, but it will be a lot less than what other countries will face. Will that bring a recession in India? I don't think so. I mean, we are very, very unlikely to get negative GDP growth. We could get some slowdown, but you know, that's about it. Now, the offsetting factor here is that our domestic economy stays in very strong shape. There is a very, there's an undercurrent of investments that are happening in India, both government and private sector. So that will protect the economy to a great extent, even if the world slows down. However, if the world goes into a prolonged recession, then the pain will get a little deeper in India.
So bottom line, as far as you are concerned, India will remain for the foreseeable future an outlier as far as growth is concerned. I mean, the Ukraine war is going nowhere. We are perhaps, through with the pandemic, at least this phase of the pandemic. So do you actually see India being an outlier when you compare India with other economies of our size or our potential?
Yeah, I think, if you look at the major economies in the world, say the top 20 by size, India does look like an oasis, which is likely to have its own idiosyncratic drivers of growth, attracting investments from around the world. And that is a, self-fulfilling virtuous cycle that India gets into. So unless, we get a really bad election outcome with a minority coalition government or something really bad happens in the world, I think this is a very reliable base case for us to depend on.
According to the IMF, India is the fastest growing major economy, but it's also important to note that India, we have a population of 140 crores. So per capita GDP is on the lower end of just around 1.5 lakh per year. So holistically and not just on the basis of overall growth, how does India compare with developing economies?
So let's not mistake the fact that India is still a poor country. When your average incomes are around $2,300, it is obviously, a lot of people in India are poor. 50% of the population earns a lot less than that. The good news is that over the next 10 years, I think a lot of Indians will walk out of poverty. So as the country grows, we estimate that per capita income will cross the magical $5,000 mark, at which point the number of poor people will be far less than what we have today. And the number of rich people will grow and the middle class will grow even faster. So middle class homes, which are currently about 60 million, will probably go to 170 million. The number of rich people in India go from 5 million to 25 million by our estimates. So, yeah, I think in 10 years, India will feel a lot less poor. But, yeah, nothing to take away from the current situation, which is India is still a poor country. And that, has to change. And in our estimate, will change over the next 10 years.
Mr. Desai, what is your forecast for next year? The IMF has pegged India's growth at 5.9%, which is significantly lower than the last year. Do you think our economic growth will slow down over this coming year? I mean, how do you see that assessment of where we are headed?
So there is some slowdown, and it's precisely for the reason that you cited earlier or asked about, which is that the global growth situation looks very challenged. Even though China has come out of the pandemic, doesn't look like the Chinese economy is growing much faster. And the Western Hemisphere is certainly struggling with growth. And therefore, India's growth rate will be a little slower than what we've seen in the last 12 months. Also, the base effects are now getting evened out. We forecast this number to be above 6%. So we are a little bit more optimistic than the IMF. But again, the IMF forecast may depend on what they think is going to happen in the US and in Europe. And if they are forecasting a recession there, then, they may be right. We're not forecasting a recession.
Sure.
And we rely on our global forecast to arrive at the Indian forecast. So our growth rate estimates are slightly higher, but no doubt about the fact that it is slowing down from last year. And that's primarily to do with external conditions.
Now, inflation remains, it's a pain point, obviously, for any economy, but perhaps ours as well. Your report, spoke about this, you referred to it. Last year, we were above the RBI 6% threshold for the most part. Do you think it still remains a pain point for our economy, where we are, our growth trajectory, and that more needs to be done by the government and the RBI to control inflation?
I think we have escaped the inflation problem that a lot of the world has faced over the last 2 years. And I think it's much down to how the government managed the situation on the ground and how the RBI has managed monetary policy. And it's also the effects of the cumulative work of the last 7-8 years with respect to inflation targeting. So our base case view is that we don't have an inflation issue going into the next 12 months. The likelihood is that inflation surprises on the downside and will be within the RBI's target over the next 12 months. So it will moderate considerably. So that's our base case view.
Final question. You know, the report also spoke about India's digital transactions, and you know, you've said that in a matter of a few years, India will become the global leader in digital transactions, real-time payments. Could you share your vision or your thoughts on what makes India's digital payment model a global leader? I mean, and is this going to genuinely be the bedrock of our economic growth, or one of the bedrocks of our economic growth going forward?
Yeah, it is one of the bedrocks, and I would actually take this beyond just digital payments. I think the impact of digitalization goes beyond payments. It's going to go into commerce. It's going to go into how banks lend money. It's already penetrated the way the government makes social transfers. So with respect to digital payments, we are already the world leader. We are under 4% of global economy, but we are 40% of all digital payments. So we are far, far bigger than the size of our economy in terms of digital payments. The next step, and you know, I would call this, you know, as the next leg is going to happen in commerce and the way India lends. So the whole India stack is a revolution. Mm-hmm. It's very idiosyncratic to India, and it's one of the pillars to our optimistic outlook on India.
All right, Mr. Desai, great speaking to you. I've gone through that report very, very closely. Great sense of optimism over there. Thank you very much for sharing your perspective, your views on what we need to be looking forward to and some of the concern areas as India and our economy grow. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for this interview.